This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
At the end of the last parliamentary session, which ended last week on Thursday, the controversial private members' bill to amend the Sharia Court Act was tabled but not debated. Adding to the controversy, the bill was pushed ahead of government bills by the Speaker of the House. It was also announced that the bill would be debated in the following session, expected in July. On the line, we have Ibrahim Sufyan of the Merdeka Centre, an independent pollster and keen observer of Malaysian politics. Ibrahim, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Hi, Fred.
Okay, Ben, I want to very quickly point out that many of the front pages of today's newspapers, NST and Utusan in particular, note that past President Hadi Awang and his deputy president, Tuan Ibrahim Tuan Man, have retained their positions uncontested in the party polls. It's also, is this proof that the party's grassroots are solidly behind the shift towards UMNO through the 355 campaign? Is that how they're reading it?
Well, I think PAS is a very interesting political organization, one that is decidedly more disciplined on account of its being, you know, in part a religious movement. I think over the last month, the party grassroots have been having their selection process at the district or divisional level. And what we've noticed is that, as reported in the newspapers, the top two positions have been uncontested. But the three vice presidents' posts have five contenders vying for selection in the Muktamar or General Assembly that's happening in the end of the third week of this month. I think there will be a much more muted contest compared to the last party elections on account of most members generally being aligned to Ustaz Hadi and generally supportive of the party's move to push for the Sharia Amendment Bill.
So is this consolidation of Hadi's thing, aided, of course, by the split in the party some time ago that resulted in the creation of Amana as a political party? How can we read this adequately? I would have thought that at some point, past members might be confused, perhaps, looking at the way in which the party has drifted closer to UMNO against their former allies in Pakatan Rakyat, now Pakatan Harapan. Do you have a sense or do you have any numbers that show how people are reading this? I mean, do they see this primarily through the lens of religion and the religious agenda, the Islamic agenda? Or are they seeing this as a deft move by the party president to actually wield influence in government, perhaps because Pakatan's prospects for taking federal power are lessening by the day?
Yeah, I think if we look at what happened in the last party election back in 2015, there was definitely a tussle between people in the party who favoured working more closely with the rest of the opposition and those who wanted the party to stay pure, ideologically pure, to what it felt were its Islamic core values. And I think in the last 2 years that has transpired, we've noticed that, yes, there has been some migration, particularly amongst grassroots party leadership to the splinter group Amana. But I think not in any numbers that are significant to actually sway the grassroots and sympathizers of the party. And this can be evidenced by the two by-elections which took place last year in Kuala Kangsar and Sungai Besar, where I think at the end of the day, when we calculated the votes that were gained by either Amana and PAS, we could notice that I think the splintering of PAS only amounted to about 10 to at most 15% of the party grassroots. And so I think to kind of extrapolate from that, what we do feel or what we think is most of the members of the party remain wedded to the party's ideology and its core struggles of establishing an Islamic state. I think what differs between those who support Amana and those who don't is the pace and the manner in which it is achieved. So I think most members are not confused by the move by the party president to cooperate with UMNO to further the Islamic agenda. I think what is a thing of concern is that how does one arrange the political forces as we approach elections? Will PAS still be contesting against UMNO? Do they have an electoral pact? I think that's the extent of the confusion that we're seeing. And I think, by all accounts, it's not likely that there will be an electoral pact. So the move by Hadi to cooperate and push the amendments to the bill is seen largely as the extent that the party has scored some kind of a moral victory in furthering its agenda, but it is nowhere closer to achieving its other political goals.
Now, this private members bill has had a fairly interesting trajectory. It started out as a private members bill. It was then supported by the government and looked like the government of the day, Barisan Nasional, UMNO in particular, was going to sponsor the bill. And then it flipped back to a private members bill. But given the kind of space that private members bills rarely ever get, they rarely ever get tabled, how is this being read by past members? When they look at UMNO and Barisan Nasional, do they see them as being supportive of this, or do they see prevarication, or they're just leaving it up to the party leadership and party elders to make these kind of compromises or backdoor deals in order to push the 355 through eventually at some point in time?
Well, I think if we look at the wider context, the wider canvas on which this discourse played out, we have to look at how PAS's participation in Pakatan Rakyat from 2008 and 2013 and its loss of the state of Kedah and its perception that they have lost some Malay support. And the party has always, you know, no party is homogenous or monolithic. So in PAS, there are different groups of leaders and members who support stronger cooperation with the rest of the opposition and those who want to remain true to their original political Islam agenda. And I think in how it has played out, the push for strengthening the Sharia bill, and it fits the wider canvas. You know, we look at the electoral numbers, see year one election to the next, so the popular support for the ruling party has been declining, particularly among Malays. And I think in the wake of the 2013 election, it's quite clear that the government was going to introduce an unpopular GST to the wider population and therefore will suffer some voter backlash. And I think in the wake of the election, there has been voter backlash, but this has been balanced out somewhat by the olive branch offered to PAS, which PAS has accepted because internally it also fits with the agenda of the conservative elements of the party to win back the party from the progressives and the moderates. So seen in that context, both parties, both UMNO as well as the hardliners in PAS, have benefited from the proposal to table the private members' bill, because for PAS leaders who are of the hardliners' inclination, it allows them to regain control of the party from the Anwaristas. For UMNO, it allows a wedge issue to be placed between PAS and the rest of the opposition, and thereby splitting the opposition votes.
Now, speaking of Anwaristas, PKR, you know, today's Sina Harian, the front page, it says PKR supports, PKR Selangor supports the discussion, the tabling of RUU 355, Rang Undang Undang 355, but they don't necessarily support the law of the amendments themselves. I wonder how this 355 campaign is playing out for PKR, which is, you know, has a large Malay base, Amana, which of course is a splinter from PAS. The Malay base parties, how are they struggling to position themselves, you know, when RUU 355 has this this cachet of being part of the Islamic agenda? Can they be seen as outwardly rejecting this agenda, even if their motive is that, it, you know, the country is not ready for it, or we have to be mindful of the plural nature of the and character of Malaysia? Well, how is this playing out for the opposition parties like PKR and Amana?
Well, I mean, politics is, in Malaysia has always been about identity and who best champions or safeguards the identity of the particular community that's, whose interests it claims to represent. And I think in the context of the 355, how it's been played out, it's giving PAS an edge over the other opposition parties, and that it is more truer to the Islamic aspirations of having the Sharia, the supreme law of the land. And I think for other parties that are also working to capture the Malay vote share, they can't be seen turning their backs away from this. So I think this explains the PKR position. In terms of real numbers, I mean, at the end of the day, politics is all about power. It is not about love, or it is not about even sometimes principles. And it's about what's practicable. And I think in the case of PKR, one has to understand their position. Their core audience, in terms of the seats that they have contested in the last election, about 50% Muslim Malays, and then the rest are Malaysians of other faiths. In contrast to PAS, to contest mostly on districts that are 80% Malay and 20% non-Muslims. And so you have a scenario where PAS definitely has to be seen championing a Malay-Muslim agenda, whereas PKR, a centre party that straddles both the Malay and the non-Malay sphere, has to tread a very fine balance in terms of supporting democratic principles, the right for PAS to table this bill and so on and so forth, being aware of the aspirations of the Muslim community and so on, but not going as far as supporting maybe the amendments. You know, so you can see this calibrated statement coming in from PKR not to offend its partners, not to offend its electorate who are Islamically inclined, but at the same time not keen to let go of the non-Muslim votes whose shares it overwhelmingly has captured in the last election and is keen to keep. So you can see where things are going on right now, where certain parties that are not relying on the Muslim votes can go all out to oppose it. So this explains why certain parties have very nuanced approach to this particular issue.
Is the nuance starting to confuse people? We've had like categorical statements made by PAS about not cooperating with Pakatan Harapan. But in the state of Selangor, we have a Pakatan Harapan plus PAS government. Does that pose any problems in terms of messaging for the ground?
I think there will be definitely some kind of rhetorical gymnastics that we expect to see as we approach the elections, which many people expect to be not too far off. But I think, having observed politics for the last, close to two decades, what I've noticed is that at the end of the day, most politicians are practical and that this political exists solely to gain political power. So I think for PAS, moving beyond the RUU 355 discussion and discourse as we get closer to the elections, the other issues that underpin its core expectations, core needs and wants, I think, will come forth. And this is basically the fight to retain Kelantan. Kelantan state government is in danger of falling because of the splintering of PAS into Amanah. So Amanah putting in a third candidate may potentially jeopardize the party's two-decade-long hold in Kelantan. And so it does need to go back to the rest of the opposition to seek their help to manage Amanah from contesting too many seats. At the same time, the party has aspirations to gain state power in Terengganu, in Kedah, maybe continue to share power in Selangor and in Perak. The question is what configuration. It's, I think, quite clear to people inside PAS, as well as the rest of the opposition, that no party can win anything without cooperating with the other. So there's a kind of game theory approach that's moving on. We are not quite into the political cycle as such, and PAS is going to a party convention in about 2 weeks' time. And so there's a lot of rhetorical gestures, bravado being bandied about. But I think after the convention, as we approach general elections, I think realism will strike and I think deals will be made.
Ben, a last question for you. We just had Jahabar Sadiq from the Malaysian Insight on the Breakfast Grill. He said he didn't expect to have that the elections, the general elections, the GE14, would happen this year. But what can you tell from, and do you have any data that suggests that perhaps or is the ground getting sweeter for Barisan Nasional, which would encourage them to call a general election sometime this year? Sometime, I think a lot of people say maybe September. Well, what's your sense of what's happening that might trigger a general elections?
Well, I think first and foremost, I mean, it's quite difficult to actually have an accurate gauge in terms of the political sentiments, in Malaysia, partly because people are not, 100% forthright when they speak to pollsters like us. But, I mean, over the years, we've developed models in order to, estimate the likely voting intentions and so on. And what we've seen is over the last 3 years, since the last general election, there's been a very discernible decline in popular support for the ruling party. And I think what really is important and what will keep Barisan Nasional in power after the general election is whether or not the opposition is united or if they continue to work in separate ways. If the opposition is able to arrive at some form of cooperation that minimizes infighting among themselves, placing more than one candidate in the district, I think Barisan Nasional will have a very, very challenging election. And therefore, I think looking at that and looking at the sentiments that is prevailing in many of the states like Sabah, Kedah, Terengganu, and Johor and others where opposition, activism is on the rise and making some inroads into either to UMNO strongholds like in Felda areas and so on. I think I'm more inclined to feel that election might be a bit later rather than sooner on account of Barisan Nasional need to really prepare the ground. They really need to be assured that it has some chance of success before facing the challenge. And the other thing, it also gives them more time in order to, undertake activities and support for people who are friendly to this cause from within the opposition in order thereby splitting them up. If the opposition finds a way to cooperate, then I think the prospect is still there. It's going to be a tough election. So going by that, I think it is likely that election will be slightly later rather than sooner. So maybe not so close in like September, maybe later to this, towards the end of the year, or even perhaps early next year.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.